Since their first appearance in books in 1927, the Hardy Boys have embodied ideals of masculinity for generations of boys. And in the late 1970s, the Hardys appeared on primetime television.
We may have to follow him on foot.
Hold it. You don't mean in there.
You know a better way to find out what's going on?
I'm not sure I want to know what's going on in a cemetery.
Christopher McGee fell in love with the Hardy Boy books as a child and continues to collect early editions. He's associate professor of children's and young adult literature at Longwood University.
The Hardy Boy books are really fascinating because, unlike many books, they don't have an official author, so to speak. When I was a kid, I was fascinated by the name on the cover, Franklin W. Dixon. And actually, in third grade, I wrote a report about how I wanted to meet this man and how I wanted to send him a letter about how cool his books were. But there's actually no Franklin W. Dixon. A man named Edward Stratemeyer started a syndicate in which he had ghostwriters produce books. He would write an outline of a plot for a book, and they would craft a book out of it.
I am surprised that at your age, you became hooked on the Hardy Boys. You seem too young to be a Hardy Boys generation.
My mom is a collector, and she grew up with Nancy Drew, and she had books in the house. And she used to take me to the library, and I just remember a shelf of these blue books that were sort of at my level as a child. And I liked the texture of the covers. I used to touch them and pick them up. And even before I could read, I remember the librarians would let me check them out and take them home. That was one of my favorite memories. So I would have them even though I couldn't read. And now they're in graphic novel versions, and they're for a newer generation.
How were they first published? This was in the 20s?
1927 is when they first started. And I think as you look through the series, about one a year seems to be how they came out.
And then much later they revised them?
Yeah, so in early versions there's a lot of jesting with their chums and driving around in their roadsters. And then when you read newer versions, it's action straight from the start. And so maybe a really good example would be I brought with me my revised version of The Tower Treasure, which is the first book in the series. This one came out in a revised version in 1959, and you open the book, and the first sentence is, "Frank and Joe Hardy clutched the grips of their motorcycles and stared in horror at the oncoming car. It was careening from side to side on the narrow road." One of the characteristics of the Hardy Boy books is that every chapter ends with a cliffhanger, almost literally that they're driving off a cliff. That wasn't necessarily true in the original books. They would often end a chapter thinking about the next direction of their mystery. But something that really characterizes the revised versions is that they had to create dilemmas for them almost every chapter of someone knocking them over the head or hanging from a ledge or something like that.
Do you also think that along the way they gave a whole generation of boys of that age a kind of ethical universe? You know, a sort of moral sphere.
It's interesting. I've thought about that a lot. I think more than morality necessarily, I think what the books are about cues about what it means to be a man, what it means to be a citizen in a world in which you are on the side of goodness. You know, one of the things in the Stratemeyer Syndicate is that the names were always really important, the Hardys, you know, that they were brave and true and that they could handle almost anything. And what attracts me is them as apprentice-type men. I guess that's what's really interesting for me.
So if the Hardy Boys series is giving us a kind of template for how to grow to be a man, are there other books in your series that you teach that sort of resist that and give alternative ways to be?
I really look to books that challenge or question the idea of being a boy. And a really great one for me is a book called Tangerine, which is by a fantastic young adult author named Edward Bloor. This is a boy who's growing up in a household in which his father is obsessed with the older brother who's a football player. And the main character, Paul, learns a lot about his family's attitudes towards boyhood. And the difference, I think, that's important is in a book like that, you don't take boyhood for granted. You're asked to think of it as something that is constructed or presented to you to accept. In the Hardy Boys world, this is just a truth. You're never asked to think about it or to even consider that it might be different for different boys. So, for instance, their friend Chet is just a failed boy rather than the Hardy Boys, who are successful boys. So I like books that draw attention to boys who are asking questions about, do I have to be like this? Do I have to be like this? You know, and ask questions about individuality. I think that's really important.
Would others do that too?
Well, I was thinking of my favorite children's books in the world, Lemony Snicket, and the Series of Unfortunate Events. I can never hide my fandom of those books. So these were a series of books that came out, I would say, over the past 10 years or so. And they're called a Series of Unfortunate Events. And they're about these three orphan children who are fleeing from situation to situation in which people are trying to do them ill will. And they are especially fleeing from a villain named Count Olaf, who is a relative of theirs, who's trying to steal their money and murder them in some way or another. And for many, many reasons, I love these books. But one of them is that it presents a world that's actually really dark and nuanced and complex. And this is a very simple idea that adults don't necessarily always have children's best interest in mind. It's a really powerful idea, but you don't see children's literature capture it all of the time. As I was saying about the Hardy Boys, this is a world in which they are being welcomed to become a part of it. In other children's books, children are being jettisoned onto their own, that they have to make their own way. And so I'm attracted to books that really show children having to develop their own power rather than being handed power by the adult world.
What about the Hunger Games?
I'm teaching the Hunger Games this semester in a young adult course. And one of the distinguishing characteristics between children's and young adult literature, and many people have talked about this, is that children's literature really welcomes children to grow up. And it offers them a sense of independence. You are becoming your own person. Young adult literature, on the other hand, says to teenagers, you are a part of the world now, and power is bigger than you are. And so it is a matter of interdependence in young adult literature. It's a recognition that it isn't your world anymore, and you need to grow up and become a part of that citizenry. Young adult literature is about getting out of adolescence and becoming an adult as fast as you can.
So who's your target audience in these classes that you're teaching with the young adult literature and the children's literature? They are to go forth and understand what?
I teach a course taken primarily by people who are going to be future teachers. I find it sad in a way that we don't read more young adult literature in high school, actually. It's something that you're expected to read on your own. And so there, in many classes you are, which is perfectly understandable, you're reading books by Shakespeare and you're reading books by Charles Dickens and that sort of thing, which is fantastic. But I wish just as often you would have a class in which you read young adult literature critically and seriously. I missed that in my adolescence. I didn't really have it till I got to college.
And you're hungry for somebody to connect this thing that resonates so deeply with you with the larger issues, instead of simply asking you to parse syntax and...
Right. Let's take a really popular example, the Twilight books, in which lots and lots of people are reading them. How fantastic would it be to have a course in which you could talk about not only what you're noticing, but to have people think about, well, what are the gender expectations here? You've got a young girl, you've got this older vampire who's inducting her into the world. What are the gender expectations? How do you feel about them as a reader? I think that's missing in a way.
It's so exciting to talk to you because it's a reminder of how powerful our influence can be on children as we feed that desire to read and open them to vast worlds.
Yeah. When many people remember back to their childhood the things that they love, they often don't say, oh, I loved the lesson in that book. They remember the maybe their parents reading it to them or maybe going to bed at night, but they also remember worlds that reflected how complicated their lives are and how deep and nuanced they are as people and reflected and respected their emotions. That's what I think is fantastic about children's literature.
Well, Christopher McGee, thank you for talking with me today on With Good Reason.
Thank you so much.
Christopher McGee is Associate Professor of Children's and Young Adult Literature at Longwood University. Major support for With Good Reason is provided by the Shia Khan Foundation and by the University of Virginia Health System, connecting doctors and patients through telemedicine to deliver high-quality care throughout Virginia, the U.S., and the world. UVAHealth.com. Support also comes from the law firm of McGuire Woods. With Good Reason is produced by the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Elliot Majerzik, Allison Quantz, and Lilia Fukin are our associate producers. Jeannie Palin handles listener services, and Miranda Bennett and Sharina Ong are our interns. We had help this week from Victor Bowen at WHRV. For the podcast, go to withgoodreasonradio.org. To reach us, call 877-451-5098. I'm Sarah McConnell. Thanks for listening.